All right, it is. This is Pure Decking for Thursday. May the 23rd, I guess. I don't know what day it is. 2013. I am Morps, and this is a show about stuff that interests me. Tonight we have Madman, RU46, Sard, and Suave. Who, I'm just went back to basics. I've got Achilleans tonight. Madman, what are you drinking, man?
Knob Creek on the Rocks. I'm preventing us from falling into the sun.
Out fucking standing. What do you got, are you?
I'm still recovering from a hangover that killed most mortal men, so I'm drinking coffee and water.
Hair of the dog, my friend. Part of a hangover is withdrawal. You need some Irish in that coffee.
I'm good.
Sard, what do you got, man?
I had to run again on the show, but I don't have anything right now, but I'm going to take the first 5 minutes and rum and coke.
There you go. Suave is already on narcotics. We don't even have to ask, so...
Must point out their wife prescription.
Codeine.
Their prescription this time.
As far as we are aware. So, speaking of drinking and mixing your pharmaceuticals, actually, after I popped on Lore Show for a bit Tuesday, I got talking with Rofax, and I am seriously thinking about starting up a drinking show. I mean, we always kind of talk a little bit about beer at the start of decking, so, you know, I've been doing some of the home brewing, and Rofax is really into it.
That'd be cool, because Fox has been into that, too. It'd be kind of neat to chat about and do reviews and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking. You know, I've got a couple of pretty decent liquor supply stores around here, not to mention I've been getting into the home brewing. So I was thinking this is something we could do. I haven't emailed Rofax and back on it yet because I'm not sure the details. I don't know what I want to do. We got to figure out who's going to be on it regularly. And, you know, time slot and all that fun crap and when who can do what. And I'm honestly thinking bi-weekly because good booze can get expensive. So
that's yeah, not, we'll do it weekly. We'll just have, rot gut of the week.
There you go.
Well, I'm also thinking maybe a little bit shorter, but, I mean, I don't know. I haven't. You know, bi-weekly full hour, maybe weekly half hour. I don't know because you can only talk about beer so much. But
I think also too, it must be mandatory that you've been drinking for 5 hours before you start the show. So I was
Well, I'd be even more thrilled if somebody else wanted to actually run the show, and I would just be on it a lot. But I don't know. I mean, the idea is there. I think we've got enough interest in it, so I'm going to play with the idea a little bit more and see what comes from it. So also, we've noticed that the schedule on the site is way out of date, so we kind of need to have a little confab and do some cleanup on what should be on there as well as
I did my part.
Yeah, you did. We got to kind of figure out what we want playing when, and I've got some ideas I need to talk to Sard about, actually. So
you're all fired but me.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, I just fired myself. There you go. Okay.
God, I'm it.
You're it, not it.
By the way, every show now will be done during third shift hours, so Madman, you can be included on most shows now, because that's when I can drink.
Rock on.
Nice.
So everything will be starting at 7 in the morning U.S. time.
Yep.
Oh, that would actually make for some great radio. Fuck, I'm up. Damn it.
God, I'm going to pound this booze. God damn it, it's 7 a.m. I am having Cheerios and bourbon this morning. I'm doing a line of speed that I bought in a car park at a biker bar last night just to get me up for this one.
Nice. So, I don't know. Well, I got some ideas there we need to play with. So, I'm very interested in kind of expanding what we're doing. I mean, it's I think we can start recruiting some podcasts already out there and try to get them on the station. So seems like that would be something good to do, you know, and pick good scheduled times for them, because we've got a fantastic music selection going right now. I don't know if anybody else has, I mean, really been putting a lot of time into listening, but we've got some good stuff playing now.
Yep, thanks, Big.
Yeah, so. I think we always have, man. I liked it.
But
we were lucky we got good support at the start, and then when Big bought it home with all those other bands.
Absolutely. You know,
big thanks to Patient Zero for all his music first off. You know?
Yep.
That was great. We sorted out the free stuff we could get, and then Big's active campaigning. Hit us over the line with some great bands like Pitter Spatter and Alex, I think it is. They're my two favorites at the moment.
Cool. Very cool. So let's move on to the topic I got. So it's the world's getting pretty cyberpunk. I mean, it's hard to deny. Google's freaking getting ready to sell AR, and everyone's collecting your data. So I mean, but in all the cyberpunk fiction, you know, your main character's always got a gun or a sword or something, right? So you know, should you be armed? You know, of course, the gun debate's been going on in the States like mad lately, and we've got what happened in London. I guess it'd be yesterday now. I still want to say this morning because that's when I saw it, but I think it actually happened yesterday. And to kind of clarify, I don't want to do the gun debate. I don't want to talk about what should be legal and what shouldn't be. I don't want to be, and I don't want to focus on just guns. There's a lot of other things you can use to defend yourself, like down to grabbing the rock off the side of the street if you have to. But I don't want to argue about, oh, assault weapons this and, you know, magazine limitations and all that other happy horse shit. I want to talk pure utility. You know, has society gotten to a point where we can go around and not have to concern ourselves with being physically able to defend yourself, you know, whatever. And you know, I am talking purely self-defense at this point. The whole idea of you know, defending yourself against the government or serious corpse cops, you're realistically, you're not going to outgun the government. They've got more than you, I promise. And unless you're getting into, like, you know, cartel level organizations, you don't outgun the government.
Right.
And that's probably true for most corp cops too. So you know, if you got private security organizations, they've probably got more bullets than you too. So the whole idea of defending yourself against the man or whatever, that's really more of a philosophical debate about rights than it is actually intending to shoot people. So that out, and like I said, I don't want to just focus on guns, but you know, I mean, that said, guns?
Well, my opinion, it's a very short answer of yes.
Okay. So, I mean, I have a gun that I purchased primarily for recreation. I mean, it's handy to have it if I, you know, ever somebody ever does break into the house. It'd just be, you know, fun to, you know, get on your fucking knees.
Your idea of recreation and my recreation are totally fucking different, dude.
Not to be creepy or anything, but yeah, no. But you know, if you think about it, especially from kind of keeping a low profile, owning a gun gets you put on a list, if you think about it. That's not entirely true, but pretty much if you legally purchase a firearm, at least in the States, you're going on the gun registry. And if you own a lot of guns, you know, legally, so you're on a, you know, if you've got a lot of guns registered to you, you probably go on a few other lists. So, yep. You know...
Owning guns only gets you put on a list if you're doing it legally.
Yeah, but there's that, isn't there?
No, that's not true. You can do a private sale and you don't have to get a background check or anything. as of right now. They're trying to change that.
You're still supposed to be registering the gun after you do the private sale.
No, you don't have to register anything. Well, that must be a state thing, because in my state, you don't have to.
Interesting. Well, okay, you know, in a lot of states, and I'm not even sure about other countries, to be honest.
You know, just looking at the overall should people be armed concept, you know, you really have to look at it. Okay, so let's say everybody should be armed. So everybody has to have some sort of self-defense weapon on their person. How many more incidences of violence are we going to see? Whether it's anger-induced, self-defense, revenge, you know, like there's a lot of different reasons that are not valid reasons for injuring other people, because there's crazy people out there. Would this prevent more harm than it causes? And I think that needs to be very seriously looked at. I think there's probably a happy middle ground in there somewhere. Doing the whole background checks on anything that could kill a person, but you know, handing out pepper spray freely to anybody, you know, something like that, I think I'd be okay with, or even like tasers and stuff. I'm not a big fan of everybody having something that can kill me, because I've definitely run into a number of people who are just too crazy and want to kill people.
Well, I'm more talking, you know, kind of from an individual standpoint here of,
okay,
you know, should, you know, does it make sense for you to carry something to protect yourself in this day and age? You know, have we gotten to that point where we can kind of say, you know, you don't really need to own it. You know, you can get away and probably be okay, you know, for the majority of your life, not owning a firearm or not owning, you know, a knife. That's something more than a tool.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm not talking recreation, I'm not talking rights, I'm just talking pure utility.
In regards to self-defense, any sort of close combat weapon or tool is a really bad idea. Whether it's a knife, or a club, or, a handheld stun gun, not the long distance ones. Because anything like that can very easily be turned against you. And if you look at statistics, more often than not, they are. If you're not like fully trained in its use, and you're some dumbass who thinks that he's got a switchblade now so he can defend himself, boy, you got another thing coming.
Dumbass with a little switchblade deserves what he's going to get. Go ahead, are you?
Well, you know what I mean, though. Like, odds are this guy's going to get stabbed or cut himself.
Just to cut in on the story here for a sec, 14 minutes ago, a bridge collapsed in Washington State, sending cars into the water below. That's all we know. Just happened.
No good. It's terrorists. Sorry.
I hope not.
Yeah, no. I think it's the same one that fell down last time. Same bridge.
wait a minute. What did we do? We just pulled it out of the water and set it up again. Oh, the shit, the duct tape failed.
The only information I hope nobody's see on dead. It's the I-5 highway crossing the Saget River, 100 kilometers on the north side of Seattle. That's it. That's 14 minutes ago. That's all we know. Anyway, back to the gun debate.
I hate that I'm cracking jokes and somebody might be dead. That's not cool.
Welcome to the internet.
Yeah, yep. Pretty much. But back to kind of the utility of it, we talk about other weapons too, but really, if you need to put a hole in something at range, it's kind of hard to beat a gun, at least for efficiency.
You know, yeah. As far as self-defense goes, generally speaking, I think pepper spray or taser, you know, taser gun, like ranged taser, are good enough to get you out of pretty much any situation, aside from being held at gunpoint, of course. But, you know, of course, that's kind of the whole chicken or the egg. If you're in an area where everybody's got a gun, then you should probably have a gun too. But if you're in an area where not everybody has a gun, then you could definitely get away with just pepper spray or a taser. It really kind of depends on your location and what you should be carrying.
See, now this is interesting, though. You haven't gone completely to the point of, well, you don't need to be armed. You can just walk around. You'll be fine. You're saying, no, maybe not a gun, but pepper spray. That's interesting to me that that's the level you're taking it to.
It definitely depends on where you're at. And I definitely feel that there's a lot of people that would benefit from carrying these types of things. Like my sister, when she went backpacking around Europe, she was given, my parents gave her one of those little keychain pepper spray canisters. And, you know, it was small enough. She was actually able to bring that through airports and all kinds of stuff like that. But she ended up having to use it. She was in Turkey with a friend that she had met while traveling around. And some crazy guy ended up really wanting to get into their hotel room. And he ended up battering it down with a fire extinguisher. So he bursts through this door to get a face full of pepper spray. And, you know, like, of course, the girls called the cops, and the cops show up, like, a minute later, and, you know, guy gets arrested and hauled away, and they never see him again. But just imagine what would have happened if she hadn't had that pepper spray. So it's definitely, at the very least, somebody would have been very physically injured. Either them or the guy, you know, they would have had to clobber him over the head with a lamp or something stupid like that. And then, you know, then you've got assault or possibly death that you have to deal with. And all kinds of stuff like that. So I definitely think like appropriate force, you know, just enough to actually stop whoever you're trying to stop. I don't think you necessarily have to kill them.
Well, appropriate force is a dangerous conversation.
there is no such thing.
Yeah, not touching that.
Appropriate force is whatever it takes to stop them, right up to blowing their head off.
Absolutely.
Up and including too.
But I definitely don't think it should be your first choice. Like, I don't think, oh, well, this guy's running towards me. First thing pops in your head is to kill them. I think that's
probably
looking at it
wrong.
I'll
give them a chance to stop. I mean, they have until I chamber the round.
Well, if you think about it, that's a good point, Madman, actually. There's a lot of intimidation factor if you go yanking that weapon out, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
like, if you pull a gun, how many fights can you avoid? Because somebody's being dumb and, you know, maybe waving, you know, maybe that dumbass with the switchblade, and, you know, you pull the Saturday Night Special on their ass, I mean, they're probably just going to run, you know?
What if they pull out a gun, too?
Well, in that I've case, already got it's... mine pointed at them. I've got the advantage. They Fair pull enough. Out a gun, I pull the trigger.
And here's the question. You might be willing to pull that trigger. How many people out there do you think would actually pull that trigger, though?
If you're not willing to pull the trigger, you don't need a gun.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you are a danger to yourself by even having the gun. If you're not
That's
willing
a good point.
To use it, then someone can walk up and take it away from you, and then you are in even more danger. It's hard to beat me to death. It's easy to shoot me to death.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are not willing to kill, you do not need to pull a gun in self-defense. I mean, I'm cool with killing as a last resort, try intimidation, whatever. But if you are not willing to pull the trigger and put a bullet through a human being, you should not have a gun for self-defense.
You know, I think that's probably something that a lot of people overlook.
Yeah, because...
You know, this is something for killing people. This isn't for intimidation. It's not for, you know, dissuading an enemy. It's for putting them down.
It's for putting them down. And it might not get to that point once you pull the gun, because as it has been pointed out, there is a big intimidation factor. They might, at that point, decide to leave. But as soon as you pull the gun, in your mind, it can't be, I'm scaring this guy off. If he gets scared off, fine, don't pull the trigger. But in your head, it's, I'm putting this guy down.
But don't you have a moral right to put him down right then and there to stop him from doing this to others?
I have a moral right to protect myself at that moment. I can't judge him for possible future actions. He might turn his life around. I'll
You're
put
protecting
him down
yourself and not the rest of the community.
If he's he's going from booth to booth in a Waffle House shooting people, yeah, I'll put him down. But pulling the gun, I'll call the cops. I might even be able to keep him there until the cops show up. But
here's a scenario. You wake up in the middle of the night, and there's somebody banging around in your house. You come out and you know, it's dark, you can't really see what's going on. You know that, you know, it's just you and your wife in the house, let's say, and you know she's in the bed. And they start moving towards you. You've got a gun in your hand. What do you do?
You shoot them. Then you put the next shot in the ceiling, call the cops, and you say, I put a warning shot up, and then I shot him.
No, I live in a state where that's not required. I put a bullet in him.
Now, you realize that there's actually a huge number of elderly who get confused and let themselves into other people's homes, as well as, like, drunk teenagers and stuff like that trying to sneak into their parents' house and go into their house.
This is such Canadian.
Wow.
Yeah, dude, if they're in your house and you're asleep and you wake up and someone's in your house, I don't give a fuck who they are. You shoot them.
You feel like you should just kill the person if they're in your home.
Fuck yeah, if they're in my house and I'm asleep in the middle of the night, dude, no hesitation.
In that specific scenario, you said the wife was right there with you in the bed. At that point, you are defending your family and property.
Hell yes.
Now you then turn the situation around and be like, oh, well, it turns out it was just the confused old lady from down the street.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you guys, but I lock my doors when I go to bed.
Exactly. It would take a hell of a lot more than just stumbling in.
Yeah, they're breaking the door to get into my apartment.
Exactly.
And you've just wrecked any opportunity for hijinks or hilarity, as I was going to break into your house when I was over there this coming year to glue
yeah,
furniture.
Well, probably
to
for the best, because then you would be
yeah, I ain't doing that now.
Yeah, that would not be a good idea. Just saying.
Well, no, actually, ooh, wait, this is a good thought, though. You know, on the flip side of, you know, should you be armed? I've got an alarm system in my house. So if somebody busts down a door while I'm asleep, the thing's going to be going off, making noise and notifying the alarm company probably before I get around, you know, get the gun out of the zipper case and get around chambered.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, at that point, the authorities are notified. So, you know, do you need the gun? And
of
course you do. I would argue you need something to defend yourself if somebody's, you know, gonna come in and, you know, somebody all hopped up on PCP and they think they're killing the zombies. Well, guess what, buddy?
But you just ruined his whole fantasy then, didn't you, by giving a zombie a gun? I'm not doing meth around you anymore, man.
Well,
have a good
just
game of gnaw your face off without you trying to shoot me.
Yeah, what a surprise. But I mean, you know, you take that scenario of where it's a confused old person who's found their way into your house, or somebody who's drunk. But, you know, flip it around. What if it's, I don't know, somebody who's on whatever the hell they decided they were calling bath salts this week? And I mean, that's the real problem. You don't know.
Yep. And you know, I guess it really depends on, once again, your location. Like personally, I've lived in a number of places where there's quite high crime rate, but it was none of it was violent crime. And I've even had been sitting in the living room, and I hear the door open, thinking it's a roommate. I get up, have a look, and it was a bum, you know, some bum, and he had just like come into the apartment. He mumbles something about Joe, and then he stumbles out the door again. I didn't even have to lift a finger. But you know, and that's what the sort of thing you're expecting. You're like, yeah, he's probably a thief, and he was probably coming to look, trying to go in and steal something.
You're not meant to call them bums. They're economically challenged.
Whatever. But I'm just saying, like,
God.
Where I was living, violent crime wasn't an issue. So it never even crossed my mind that I would have to kill a guy or somebody was going to try to kill me. Now if I had have like tried to forcibly restrain this person, it probably would have gotten violent and somebody would have gotten hurt. But he just left and went and locked the doors and, you know, called the police and they showed up and nothing ever came of it. But, you know, if I had had a gun, well, that might be a dead person. And, you know, I don't care who you are. If you kill somebody like that, that's not going to be easy for you. And it's definitely not going to be easy for them. You know, you're definitely defending your
responsible.
You're definitely defending your family and everything like that. But I don't care who you are. It's not an easy thing, and it's going to have a lasting impact on your psyche. But I think that it's something that you really have to put a lot of weight on making an action like that.
Well, that goes back to what Madman said. If you're not willing to pull the trigger on somebody, then you probably shouldn't have one.
Oh no, you should definitely be willing, but I'm just saying it's not going to be something that's easy, and it's going to have a very long-lasting impact on your psyche.
Oh yeah, no, if you're in the situation where any of this is suddenly relevant, it's a bad day. No, I don't think anybody's arguing that. And you're not like, there's a bomb. Kaboom, you know, kaboom. I mean, yeah, I was kind of making jokes about it, but I mean, yeah, in all seriousness, if you're to the point where somebody's breaking in your house and you're, you know, pulling the weapon, whatever it is, that's not a good day.
From a utility point of view on any type of weapon, we're pretty much safer now than we have been. Yes, mass murders get a lot of play on the news because people will get ratings. But stranger killings are actually down in the U.S. So, you know. Yeah, stranger killings are down in the U.S. Killing people you know is down in the U.S. So in the part of the world we're living in, I'm pretty safe. Even if I'm living in Caprini Green, the murder rate there has dropped dramatically over the past several years. I'm probably going to be safe my entire life without ever having a gun. It's not a question of, am I going to be safe? It's like, if I have a tool and don't need it, cool. If I need the tool and don't have it,
bad day.
Yeah, bad day.
That's when you're in trouble.
There are points, like the school shooting in Connecticut. If any of the people in the front office had concealed carry permits and were permitted to concealed carry, that guy wouldn't have shot a single kid. Yep. He shot several people trying to take him down. If any of them had a gun, that guy would have been dead, and all those kids would have been saved.
Once again, sticking a Band-Aid over a broken arm.
But in
Kentucky, we actually had an incident where someone was going on a shooting rampage in a school. A teacher went out to his truck, grabbed the deer rifle he was going to be going hunting with that weekend, went in, put the kid down. There was one injury from the kid firing off, attempting to kill some people. Most of his other shots missed. By the time the teacher got back, he saved dozens of people by putting that one shooter down.
Oh, okay. We're kind of getting away from what I want, because I didn't want to do the gun debate.
I knew that was a slippery slope.
Well, I kind of thought it was going to go there, but...
it always ends up there. It's what's in the news.
Well, but as far as the argument of utility, I've wasted money on something that I'm going to be having fun with. I'm probably never going to use it. Cops around here go 20, 30 years without pulling a gun in the line of duty, and they're dealing with domestic violence and crazy people all the time.
Well, let's get away from guns and talk about some other forms of self-defense. You know, knives are a lot easier to get and carry around than a gun. I've yet to see one run out of ammo. I mean, I'm sure it happens, but I've
never but you got to get in close. You know, it's so easy for somebody to use that against you because they have to be in close too. Like,
you can throw them.
Knife's a bad idea. You know, pepper spray that'll incapacitate just about anybody just as much as a knife.
Okay.
And you can do that from a distance.
If you're going from a utilitarian point of view, knives are cool.
And a knife, then you can do the double whammy, and then you got nothing to worry about. But,
I wouldn't go knife as a self-defense tool. I would just go knife as a tool that you should have on you for all the things a knife's good for.
Yeah, they're great tools. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, no arguments there.
It's a screwdriver. It's a pry bar if you're careful. It's a knife when you need a knife.
It's a toothpick.
It's an entrenching tool. It's it's a knife.
Okay. What about, let's get into some more oddball stuff here. What about slingshots? I mean, you know, all of us have seen the Slingshot Channel. I mean,
oh yeah,
you can do homemade slingshots that, you know, 30 yards will put somebody down as well as a gun.
I'm going to go with there's no utility in a slingshot. It's just a toy to have fun with.
Okay.
Are we going to talk about anything legal in my country?
I don't know, is archery legal in your country?
Oh, come on. Slingshots have got to be legal. Are slingshots illegal too?
Illegal.
Oh, wow. Well, oh, they're not illegal. About
a screwdriver without a permit? Illegal.
Oh, my God.
You need a permit for a screwdriver?
It in public. If you're carrying it in public, you need a permit.
What if I'm an electrician?
If you're an electrician, then you've got every right to carry it because you've got a card to say that you're an electrician, and that is a certified tool being used for a certified job. But if you're just... you know, Bob going down to Ted's house to give him a hand, putting in some lights, and
I have a screwdriver in my toolbox, I'm fucked.
Yeah, you're fucked.
That is stupid as shit.
Yeah, well, that's the law, man. It's incredibly hard to have anything. Like, I've been pulled over and put in handcuffs for having a screwdriver in my car. I also had a police scanner on the front seat of the car, and my car description just happened to match an armed robbery vehicle at the time, but it was still, you know, detained and questioned on why I had a screwdriver.
Because I have a screwdriver.
Because the car was really fucking old and I used to tune it on the run. Because it would just constantly go out of tune. Flood the engine all the time.
Alright.
To be fair, you know, if a cop is giving you grief for having let's say a screwdriver, the law specifically states without lawful excuse, then they can take action. So if it's in a toolbox in the back of your vehicle, or even just in the trunk of your car or anything like that, they really can't technically take action. If they do, they're being dick cops. You could probably take them to court over it.
That is to be said, right? Yeah, they're generally just hassling you for it. Yeah. But at all times, put the screwdriver down, back away, and place hands on head.
Oh, like, absolutely.
Immediately. Getting back to carrying knives and stuff like that, and I've been stabbed multiple times in separate occasions, and I've stabbed people multiple times in separate occasions. It's a psychological head fuck to get stabbed and to stab someone else in anger.
Oh,
I don't know what it would like to be to shoot someone, but getting up close and personal to where you can smell that person and feel that blood on your hands, or feel your own blood running out of you into your own hands, is a whole different level of shit. And not to denigrate a school shooting or anything like that, but for Buddy to be hacked up in the street, that's an extremely personal, fucked up thing to do. I mean, I couldn't imagine what it would be like to be hit with a machete or a cleaver have a huge gash hanging out. Yeah. Or to be hit in the mid-gut, you know, and have part of your lower intestines hanging out. And I've seen that in a fight. It's not good. But I've seen what a ball pin hammer can do to a hand, too. But that's a whole different other story. But it's an extremely personal thing, and guns are just such a pussy way out, I think. There's no honor in doing anything with a gun, unless it's a wartime. But coming back to the whole situation, my point of view is what actually transpired in the last 48 hours with that man being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fuck ton more people standing around with fucking phones filming this thing. They're all gang fucking those guys like they should have been. It was their community duty. It was their duty of care to the individual that was being attacked. For them to rush those people, be damned the injuries they're going to take to try and save one of their own people.
Yep.
Like, fucking hell, man. There was more of them. Who cares? No, there is no argument around it.
You know, I know exactly what happened there. These guys had a machete and an axe. And this is in the UK where nobody has guns. Really anything that they can use to attack these people at range. And generally, I'm sure all of the people who saw this, none of them personally knew this man. And really, when it comes down to it, are you going to risk rushing a guy with a machete over a stranger that you don't even know?
Yes, because I'd want someone to do that for me.
Fair enough. I think most people in a crowd are not going to make that action. It's really going to take like one leader type individual to kind of get everybody riled up to take action. And if that individual isn't there to get everybody riled up, it's not going to happen. Now, if somebody had some sort of ranged weapon there, it would have been a totally different story. And, it's pretty easy to take on two guys from, 50 meters.
Well, you'd like to say that. I'd run in and stop those guys. You'd love to say that. Now, I'm guessing RU's been in a few situations, so he can say that he would. Most of us haven't. So, you say that, but until it happens, you probably don't really know how you're going to react.
I don't really hesitate, and I've been in a lot of situations like that, especially in the work I used to do. There'd be suddenly five dudes beating the shit out of one guy in the corner. and your instinct is to jump in there and help that guy, and you don't actually think about it at the time, and you don't realize how many blows you've taken until it's all over.
Yeah.
But somebody has to be the first one in, man. And
yeah.
I've gone in to help buddies in a fight.
Exactly.
Just jump in and take the one closest to you.
Yeah, it's... no, I've jumped into a fight before, but not where, you know, somebody had a fucking axe. I mean,
yeah, I've got cartilages bruising out of place that, you know, because people had iron pipes. But it's I think if the community were more willing to get in and stop this shit, it'd be less and less incentive for these crazy fucks to be doing this. They'd be like, hang on a minute, let's just wait till he's on his own and we'll get him then. Then it should be up to Buddy to have the knife or the gun or whatever on his own. But if you're in a public area where there are law-abiding citizens around you and there are one or two douchebags that think they're above everyone else and want to cause someone harm, well, 15, 20, 30 people, they're certainly going to tire out of swinging that axe, or they're going to get dogpiled enough to where they can't swing anymore. And if anyone ever menaces you with a knife, go in and bear hug the motherfuckers.
Yeah. But, you know, I think another big problem with this here, and probably another reason why nobody did anything, is this happened in a big city. And, you know, if you've lived in a big city, you kind of get to realize that you don't have that idea of community, or at least that's what I've noticed in North American big cities. Everybody kind of just lives in their own little bubble and just kind of coexists with everybody else, but doesn't really incorporate them into their own idea of community. And I've noticed that in big cities, and I've lived in very small towns as well, and I definitely know there, if anything like that happened, everybody would, at the drop of a hat, would like hop right in there and save that person. But I definitely think that the mentality in a city is quite a bit different, and that's probably also a contributing factor why nobody actually stepped in.
All right. Well, I just looked at the time, so we're gonna, if I'm gonna do news stories, we gotta get moving here. The last thing I had in the list was a freaking compound bow would be pretty damned intimidating if somebody pulled one of those on you too. So just to wrap up,
pretty hard one.
I kind of think it's still a good idea to carry something just to be able to defend yourself, whether it's, you know, pocket knife, gun, whatever. I'm not entirely sure of how necessary it is. So that was the real question, is, you know, gun, whatever, you know, gun, compound bow, don't care. I don't know, Madman, you think you should, you know, you think you need something in this day and age to defend yourself with just in case?
In most first world countries, no. But are I would you? Go with gun or mace rather than compound bow or knife.
Yeah. Are you? What do you think? Yes or no?
Just your everyday carry, like your folder, you know, or your Swiss Army. Yeah. Your tool. Because you are defending yourself. You're not out there to cause havoc. Like, if you're out to cause havoc, put on the body armor, grab the blades, bring the guns. Wait.
That's entirely not what I'm talking about.
Both sides of the argument, you know? Both sides.
Go Mad Max on them. I like it.
Definitely.
Sard, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I definitely think you should have something. Just for those what-if scenarios and... You know, you got to protect yourself, and it's a tool, you know.
Yep.
If
you're, right,
we're talking about knives and things.
Personally, I think it's not a bad idea. You know, you probably don't need once again, it depends on where you're at. Where I'm at, pepper spray would be more than enough. But of course, because that's illegal, I generally carry a backup wallet if I'm downtown. That's got, like, you know, $20 in cash and some old expired credit cards. And if I ever get mugged or anything like that, I'm taking it out, throwing it at him, and running.
This from the man who stands 6 foot fucking seven. And, you know, just even if he hunched his hair back on the back of his neck, would look like a brown bear. You know, is turning and running.
Hey, but you know
I'm
what?
The 4 foot midget jumping in.
I started doing this after my 6'2" friend got mugged after coming out of an ATM and basically got curb stomped because he thought he was just going to fight back instead of giving them his wallet. So I definitely think, like, generally when this sort of thing happens, it's not just one guy. You know, it's going to be a bunch of people. So you just want to, you know, throw them something, make them think that they got what they want, and you get the fuck out. Because, you know, if you are going to go with a lose-lose situation.
If you are going to go with the fake wallet, you might want to print out Goatsy, fold it up, and put it in there for them. Not like in the bilk part, because, you know, they might get to looking at it before, you know, you're completely away. That'd be like folded up and stuck under the old driver's license or something. Or, well, I don't think you really want a driver's license and then throw away a wallet, but like under a card or something so they have to kind of find it.
And that's why you want the 380 in your pocket. You just pull it off, drop the first one, the other four should start running.
Fair enough. All right, let's get to current events here before we scare everybody off. Although, hey, hitting the gun debate did work for ratings. I just saw our listener count went up while we were talking about that. That's why mainstream guys do that shit. So
now back to Obama.
Yeah. Actually, though, that it wasn't a very tech-centric topic, but I thought it was kind of a fun one. Just to kind of break format here a little bit, shoot me feedback. Get on the feedback forum. Let people know. Let me know what you think about hitting topics that aren't exactly, you know, hardcore computer. So, because I thought we had fun with that one, but
always throw motherboards at your mugger.
They're
sharp as shit.
You get the wrong side of that thing, man.
I don't know. The stun ducks you built were pretty fun.
Those things fucking hurt. I talked to myself as much with the freaking Buzznucks as I did anybody else. Got pissed off at those things, threw them away. Although they did make a pretty good spark when you hit metal with them. Anyways.
That sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah. Current events. First one up is from Geek.com. As part of a marketing campaign in Brazil, Domino's teamed up with the advertising agency Artplan Sao Paulo to distribute enhanced DVDs to 10 movie rental stores in both Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. The DVDs carry relatively new movies, including Argo, The Dark Knight, and Skyfall, but have been coated with a thermal ink and a flavored varnish. As a DVD plays in a player, it heats up, and in this case, both the ink and the varnish react. The varnish starts emitting the smell it carries, in this case, freshly baked pizza, and the ink changes to reveal a new image. The end result is your TV room smells of pizza, and when you remove the disc, the black surface will now look like the top of a pizza, and it carries a message to suggest the next movie be accompanied by real pizza.
Oh, God. Okay.
That's awesome.
I love that as an advertising campaign.
Exactly. That's ingenious.
You know, it's genius from the perspective of the pizza joint, but, you know, like, I don't want this shit. This is so intrusive in your home. Not to mention, like, this isn't, like, natural pizza ingredients that you're smelling. This is some sort of sketchy chemicals that are filling your home now. I bet you anything that if you actually went and analyzed this stuff, it's probably carcinogenic and all kinds of other stuff. It's filling your home with a smell that wasn't asked for. And, like, I feel like that's going a little too far.
If they put a label on the DVD... this will smell like pizza. No
fair
complaint.
Enough.
Yeah, I mean, if you know what you're getting, it would kind of suck to be sitting there trying to, you know, popcorn or something, the whole house. And you know the smell is probably not correct because it's a chemical reproduction, right? So they're almost never entirely perfect. So you're getting this faux pizza smell. You know, what if you've done something else for dinner and you know, got Chinese takeout or something with you while you're watching the movie or popcorn?
Does this Chinese food smell weird? I suddenly crave pepperoni. Anything green growing in your cream of some young guy?
Oh. Wow. I'm kind of with Suave a little bit. I think it's pretty damned intrusive to... It's like, oh, you rented a movie. Obviously, you want to be influenced to order a pizza. So,
but if you
I
really
think it's
want
a hell of a good
fun,
idea.
You know those the house sprays that people put in to make their house smell pretty? Generally, the dudes that smoke way too much pot generally have them all around their house, and they give a little spray every 5 minutes. Go get something that emits a spark and set it up on the timer.
Oh.
Fireball every so many minutes. That's alcohol based.
That'd be hilarious.
I thought you were just saying go to Spencer's and replace it with a can of fart.
Or you could do that.
Seriously, my main problem with those types of machines is they generally are all mounted quite high on the walls, which is usually at eye level for me. I've been blasted in the face by these things in so many public bathrooms, it's not even funny.
And if they had the little spark in front of it, you'd, you know, need a new haircut every time.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, next one up. This is from the H Online. U.S. security blogger Brian Krebs writes about a service that is relatively new, at least to the general public, DDoS attacks. Apparently, one enterprising stress tester discovered by Krebs even told the blogger that he was working for the FBI. The booters market their service to the public, thinly disguised as facilities that allow administrators to stress test their own systems. Krebs says that he located and interviewed one of them, a 22-year-old citizen, U.S. citizen. Greetings, citizen. The booter told him that he considered his DDoS testing to be perfectly legal. Individuals used it at their own risk and on their own responsibility, he said in a response that was riddled with spelling and grammatical mistakes. The booter explained that for scenarios such as DNS amplification attacks, his services merely took advantage of many DNS servers' default settings. If server operators didn't agree, they could prevent it, he told Krebs. Yeah. If you didn't want me to break into your house, you should have put up stronger doors. The booter went on to explain that he even works for the FBI. Reportedly, the FBI allows him to continue his business and receives full access to the log files of all customer activities in return. Damn. By way of proof, he provided the alleged details of his FBI contact. When Krebs called the number and disclosed that he was a journalist, he wasn't given any information on the matter. However, only minutes after the conversation with the FBI, the booter cut his contacts to Krebs, saying, "I've been asked to block you. Have a nice day." So, yeah, some of the DDoS guys are trying to go legit, and the government's actually hiring them, which I find perfectly believable.
So is he just, as far as the open market, somebody hires them to DDoS their own site?
That's the idea, except if it's probably more along the lines of, I administer Google, can you DDoS that for me? You know.
I'm hoping they have credentials to back that up.
Yeah, bullshit. They don't do any checking, they just fire off the attack. Like, yep, I got my $500, I'll hit the button. Whatever. I mean, you know they don't do any serious checking. I mean, come on. It's kids running botnets. So,
we need to get some rates here. I might want to carpet DDoS the world.
It's not like it's hard. Next story up. This one's from the New York Times. A Bronx detective came upon an online criminal enterprise that offered for a low price to hack into private email accounts. But the detective was not seeking to build a case against the outfit, federal prosecutor said on Tuesday. Rather, the prosecutor said he became a client. So instead of shutting down the hacking operation he found, he started paying them. Nice. Using information bought from the hackers, the detective, Edwin Vargas, obtained information on at least 43 email accounts associated with 30 people, including at least 19 members of the New York Police Department in the Bronx, according to a complaint unsealed in the federal district court in Manhattan. The reason for the digital snooping appeared to be personal, law enforcement officials said. Detective Vargas, 42, suspected a former girlfriend, also an employee of the police department, an official said, had started a new relationship with a fellow officer. Detective Vargas and the woman had had a child together, but officials said they had broken up. A 20-year veteran of the police department, never before under suspicion for any impropriety, let alone any criminal activity, James Moschella, a lawyer for the detectives' union, said of Detective Vargas, whom he represented at arraignment. So, I'm going to skim the rest of the story here. Basically, he's paid them a little over $4,000. Is something between $50 and $250 per account, and the low prices are suggesting that the email accounts were not hard to hack into. So, it's pretty funny one that this cop was paying guys to hack into other cops' email accounts, but apparently cops' email accounts are not hard to hack into. So, which is actually not really all that surprising.
A lot of freaking money just to pay just to read someone's email. It couldn't have been that interesting.
You know,
at least I wouldn't think. But
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this wasn't for personal reasons. He was actually doing an investigation on corruption in the Force. That's why he had to go hire a third party to look into this, because he couldn't trust any of their own tech guys. And he was found out, so they're just slandering him.
I want you as to my defense lawyer. Yeah.
Hopefully he kept a copy of the emails to prove that.
Wow.
Otherwise, I think he should forfeit his pension, pay whatever fines, and then head to jail for a few months.
All right. Next one up. This one's from CNET. Now, I want to point out there is a reason I want to talk about this story, but it's a very thinly disguised ad for the Samsung Galaxy 4 and LoJack. But they talk about corporate goons, so it's kind of what I wanted to focus on in the story. On Tuesday, LoJack for laptops maker Absolute Software announced the imminent release of LoJack for Android smartphones, starting with the Galaxy S4. In the event that your smartphone disappears through your own carelessness or malicious intent, LoJack software offers remote locking and deleting to keep your phone, blah, 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 blah. However, what you really pay for is the company's team of cybercrime cracking recovery specialists who will go out and attempt to retrieve your absconded with phone. And then the story goes on about how LoJack is embedded in the firmware, so even if you wipe the phone, it doesn't go away. I cut it down significantly, and that was still mostly a big-ass ad for the Galaxy S4 and LoJack. But I didn't know LoJack sent out mooks looking for the phones. So
I'm envisioning a bunch of fat nerds with glasses and wiffle bats.
Awesome.
Now, I either want that to be true, or them to have hired ex-Green Berets, and they kick in a door with, like, an AR-15 grenade launcher and just spray a room full of bullets just to get somebody's stolen cell phone. Either one of those would be awesome. Otherwise, I want my money back for the LoJack.
I apologize for all the noise my cell phone is making. Apparently, Ingress does notifications now when somebody's attacking your portals.
Wow, you're getting
the damn
raped,
phone across
dude.
The room. I'm still hearing it. So it was like,
you're getting absolutely raped then. I'm hearing that thing go off every 30 seconds.
That's actually not a bad thing. That just gives me something to do in the game.
Man,
so
it's going to piss you off at 3 a.m.
It's getting muted here if it doesn't quit. So let's see, where was I? Torrent Freak story. Okay, next one up is from Torrent Freak. Kim.com has announced that he is the inventor of the so-called two-step authentication system and has a patent to prove it. The Mega Upload founder says that the security mechanism, which has just been introduced by Twitter, is being used by U.S. companies more than a billion times every week without permission. .com says he doesn't want to sue, but he might if the likes of Google and Facebook don't help fund his legal battle with the U.S. government.
Oh, that, yeah, blackmail. That'll work.
Yeah, two-step authentication is a system designed to prevent unauthorized access to online accounts. Blah, 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 blah. The patent US 607-8908 titled Method for Authorizing in Data Transmission Systems was filed back in April of 1998 and published in June of 2000 under .com's birth name of Kim Schmitz. And apparently the abstract does in fact describe a two-step authentication system. So .com says, I have never sued them. I believe in sharing knowledge and ideas for the good of society, but I sue them now because of what the U.S. has done to me, he declares. He's so far up in his, you know, he's got enough legal problems already, so this is probably not a good idea. But he did post to Twitter, want to buy a worldwide license to my two-factor authentication patent?
He is trying to commit suicide in a really unusual way, isn't he? He is really attempting the world's most weirdest suicide in the middle of a park at 2 a.m. naked, preferably hanging from a tree. Like, hello, he's just threatened the U.S. government, Google, and Facebook. That's a lot of money and corpse cops that could find you and then you'd have to commit suicide in a really horrible way. Because everyone knows that it's always your choice.
Yeah.
You can either be raped to death by a silverback gorilla, or you can hang yourself in Central Park.
Or all the nerds with wiffle bats are just going to beat you till you die.
I don't know. The silverback gorilla thing seems interesting. I just want to know where they're getting the silverback gorilla from.
Borrowing it from a zoo, dousing the guy with estrogen, and videotaping the results.
You've thought about that.
Oh, man.
Wow. But if you want to take care of that, Morps, we'll just talk about gorilla rape here.
Actually, I'm just trying to turn the freaking notifications off.
Yeah.
I'm going with, this is a good reason why we need to actually abide by our patent system in the U.S.
Yeah, no one wants, you know, forced gorilla rapage.
No one wants forced gorilla rapage, and his patent is way too fucking broad.
Would you transport the silverback gorilla in, like, a horse float? Or something like that?
Hell no! You know how hard it is to transport a silverback gorilla? I'm transporting that guy! You put a pack over his head and a gun to his temple, he will follow you anywhere.
No, everybody knows you use smart cars to transport gorillas.
I hadn't thought that out there. I was bringing the gorilla to him where it would have been easier to... See, this is why I need you, Madman. When we form our own team to go around and get these phones back, you know, we just give them a two-step program. We knock on the door. Excuse me, sir, you can give the phone back, or we come back tomorrow night with the silverback gorilla.
And by the way, that's
when you tap me on the shoulder and go, no. We're going to bring him to the gorilla. It'll be easier that way. That'll save us some time.
Yeah, have you ever tried to fit a gorilla in a paseo?
No, but I've seen a bear in a larder. You know, so I figure if you can put a bear in a cheap Russian piece of shit from the communist era, you can get a silverback gorilla in like a Honda.
See, that is at 57 minutes in when you want to cut that one out, are you?
And that was our filler piece while Morp turns his notifications off on the phone.
I've got them off.
But we're available for children's parties, bar mitzvahs, weddings. We do anything.
Nothing says shalom like a stripper clown. Now, next story up. This is from... I don't even know where that came from. This is from Yahoo. Finance.yahoo.com. Big phone companies have begun to sell vast troves of data they gather about their subscribers' locations, travels, and web browsing habits. Speaking of phones... The information provides a powerful tool for marketers but raises new privacy concerns. As Americans browsing the internet grow more accustomed to having every move tracked, combining that with information with a detailed accounting of their movements in the real world has long been considered partially sensitive, or particularly sensitive. Instead of merely offering customers a trusted conduit for communication, carriers are coming to see subscribers as sources of data that can be mined for profit, a practice more common among providers of free online services like Google and Facebook. A Verizon Wireless customer navigates to a website on his or her smartphone today. Information about that website, her location, and her demographic background may end up as part of a data point in a product called Precision Market Insights. Good God, that is a scary name right there. Precision Market Insights. The product, which Verizon launched in October of 2012 after trial runs, offers businesses like malls, stadiums, and billboard owners statistics about the activities and backgrounds of cell phone users in particular locations. Several European mobile network operators have launched similar efforts. This week, German software giant SAP AG is introducing a service that will gather smartphone use and location data from wireless carriers and is offering it to marketing firms. So, just right there in that story, I'm thinking RU's concept of not having a cell phone is looking better and better, especially after all the noise mine was just making. My God. carriers acknowledge the sensitivity of the data, but as advertisers and marketers seek more detailed information about potential customers and the telecom industry seeks new streams of revenue amid a maturing cell phone market, big phone companies have started to tiptoe in. The companies say they don't sell data about individuals, but rather about groups of people. Privacy advocates say the law permits them to do so. In 2011, Verizon sent a notice to customers saying that they may use their data in this way. Chris Sofagan, a privacy specialist at the ACLU, says the ability to profit from customer data could give wireless carriers an incentive to track customers more precisely than connecting calls requires, and to even store more of their web browsing history. This that could broaden the range of data about an individual's habits and movements that law enforcement could subpoena, he says. It's the collection that's the scary part, not the business use. I don't know. The business use kind of scares me a good bit, too, there, buddy. Verizon responds that the data it analyzes for precision market insights is information it already collects, and that it complies with legal processes when it gets requests. I'm going to skim the rest of the story here. Pretty much, Verizon is doing this. Several of the European carriers are doing this. AT&T is not, but they're looking at it.
So currently I'm with a good company, if one can exist.
Moderately.
Okay.
Yeah, they're looking at it, though, so they haven't started doing it yet, but I think it's more just like somebody at AT&T has gone, hey, that's a good idea. Let's start looking at that now. So
I can envision a day when I go to get a service, you know, and they just look at me and go, we don't have you in our system. You don't really exist. We've got nothing on you. The hell, you haven't been anywhere for 35 fucking years. What? There's no tracking history of you. Because I don't have a phone, man.
Well, that's when you just, you know, claim you've been living under a rock. But if you want a fun short story to see where advertising can go, go check out a short story called Dead Merchandise. I heard it on Escape Pod, their last one. It's a... You want a good short story on advertising gone nuts, because you can see it from there.
Wow.
Yeah, no, go check that story out and then come back and tell me that you don't think the business use case isn't scary, too.
I'm seeing some really good potential future plans on this. Like, AT&T come out with the, we're not going to track you on this plan?
Yeah, for an extra $50.
Yeah, yeah. They're not going to use
for an extra, $50 a month, we were not going to track you.
But we're going to have to put you on a government list to say that we're not tracking you so that they can start tracking you. Because if you don't want to be tracked, then you must be doing something illegal.
To be fair, Verizon does have an opt-out. You can go on your account on the website and opt out of it. But that's one of those things you kind of have to know how to do. And they don't exactly point it out.
Is there a way to make this all opt-in instead of opt-out? We'll give you a discount on your phone bill.
We're setting it up, yes.
Yeah, you should be able to opt out, and then you charge more for your phone because they're not making any money off your data.
I want to... I'm coming up with an idea for a cell phone company. All we're going to do is connect phone calls, and it'll be a flat rate. $50 a month, you have a phone.
And another news madman was shot in the head right next to Kim.com there.
After being raped by a silverback gorilla.
I think I can get investors for this. Both the silverback gorilla raping ring and my new phone company.
You know, I had it in my head that Pure Decking was a little bit more serious than IHN, and that's not true at all, is it?
I just killed that today, didn't I? But... It's seriously, fine. I think that would be a good run for a company. Just straight, hi, we're doing what we're selling for you, what we're selling to you, and then nothing else.
Yeah, I'd go with them.
I would too.
Yeah, but eventually they'd get so big, they'd end up being douchetastic and selling all the stuff they had anyway, you know. That's how it generally works.
But douchetastic in other ways. Branch out into other industries, private armies, whatever.
We're going to go from cell phone to private army. I like it.
I'm good with that. There's a lot of children displaced around the world these days.
That's a good job.
Damn. Better to be in a child soldier than a child sex slave.
Hey, at least they're employed. Oh, wait, I didn't let you finish that sentence. Never mind.
No, because where it was going was a lot darker than that. I pulled myself up, realizing I'm not an IHN.
God. All right, last story up. This is kind of our mind bender. It's from sciencemag.org. Physicists have long known that quantum mechanics allows for a subtle connection between quantum particles called entanglement, which measures one part, or in which measuring one particle can instantly set the otherwise uncertain condition or state of another particle, even if it's light years away. Now experimenters in Israel have shown that they can entangle two photons that don't even exist at the same time. It's really cool, says Jeff.
And that's
there's your quote. It's really cool, says Jeremy O'Brien, a experimenter at the University of Bristol in the United Kingdom who is not involved with the work.
I was going to say, he doesn't understand a fucking thing. He knows there's something good here, but he doesn't understand it, so it's pretty cool with a thumbs up.
Such time-separated entanglement is predicted by standard quantum theory, O'Brien says, but it's certainly not widely appreciated, and I don't know if it's been clearly articulated before. Entanglement is a kind of order that lurks within the uncertainty of quantum theory. Suppose you have a quantum particle of light, or a photon. It can be polarized so that it wriggles either vertically or horizontally. Wriggles, is that a scientific term? The quantum realm is also hazed over with unavoidable uncertainty. And thanks to such quantum uncertainty, a photon can also be polarized vertically and horizontally at the same time. If you then measure the photon, however, you will find it's either vertical or horizontally polarized, as the two ways at once state randomly collapses one way or the other. And that's the theory part that just makes you go, what? It's a very, very small version of Schrodinger's cat.
It's both until it's observed.
Exactly. Entanglement can come in if you have two photons. Each can be put into the uncertain vertical and horizontal state. However, the photons can then be entangled so that their polarizations are correlated even when they remain undetermined. For example, if you measure the first photon and find it horizontally polarized, you'll know that the other photon has instantaneously collapsed into the vertical state and vice versa, no matter how far away it is. Because the collapse happens instantaneously, Albert Einstein dubbed the effect spooky action at a distance.
Wow.
It doesn't violate relatively, though. It's impossible to control the outcome of the measurement of the first photon, so the quantum link can't be used to send a message faster than light. Now, Eli Megadeth. Megadeth?
Go with Megadeth.
Megadeth? Eli Megadeth. Hagi Eisenberg and colleagues at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem have entangled two photons that don't exist at the same time. They start with a scheme known as entanglement swapping. To begin, researchers zap a special crystal with a laser light. I'm already liking this science. We're shooting lasers at crystals. A couple of times to create two entangled pairs of photons, pair 1 and 2 and pair 3 and 4. At the start, photons 1 and 4 are not tangled. But they can be if physicists play the right trick with 2 and 3. So the way this works, I'm going to quit reading the description because I can just say it better. They generate two pairs of entangled photons, 1 and 2, 3 and 4. And they figured out that if they then entangle 2 and 3, 1 and 4 are also entangled. But 1 and 4 don't have to exist at the same time. So you can basically have two photons that, you know, one is gone by the time the second one exists that are quantumly entangled. And they've proved it in the lab.
So you can send messages with Morse code to the past.
Maybe. I'm not actually sure of the utility of this, but I'm wondering if it's a Gen 1 time machine.
Can you say winning lottery numbers? You're not seeing the utility in this. Winning fucking lottery numbers.
But it says it can't be used to send messages faster than the speed of light, so technically you couldn't go back in time.
That's the original, just two quantum entangled, like 1 and 2, since it's instantaneous. 1 and 2 can't go faster than light. But let's say 1 ceases to exist yesterday, the Powerball tickets are, the Powerball numbers are drawn, like, that night. I have 3 existing the day after the Powerball numbers, and then I'm fucking with 3, sending numbers back to 1.
I think
when it existed.
It's not quite like that. I think it's more when they're talking about like time, like sending a message back in time. Think of it more like You have entangled pair, one on our planet and one over in like Proxima Centauri. And you send a message between these entangled pairs. Well, that's going to be instant. But any light that comes from there is going to take, you know, multiple years. So you're actually getting... So relatively speaking, that event doesn't actually happen until it's observed. But because you're getting that information before then, it's almost as if you're actually sending a message back in time by 4 years. So I believe that's kind of more what they're talking about, not actually like... you know, talking to yesterday on our planet.
Well, I don't think distance I've read is something even a factor about this before. In this.
No, I know, I understand, but like, I've read stuff about like, you know, breaking the laws of causality and stuff like that with quantum entangled pairs, and that's pretty much what they talk about when they're talking about like time, communicating through time. It's not really like talking to yesterday. It's like on our planet.
Well, I just thought it was cool because they actually did it in a lab, and they had a pair of photons that are protons. I'm sorry, that were quantumly entangled, but they didn't exist at the same time. That's cool.
It is. That's fucking so awesome.
As Jeremy said, that's cool. Thumbs up.
I have no idea what it means. I'll be perfectly honest, but I think it's cool.
My favorite entangled particle experiment they're doing is teleportation. They're using entangled particles to teleport subatomic particles from island to island in the Canary Islands.
Well, I thought they were just using that's only it to light, transfer the properties of atoms. They're not like...
Oh, they haven't got up to a full atom. They're doing subatomic particles, and it's actual teleportation. Quantum leap.
Well, It's not moving that physical particle. It's just imbuing the properties from one particle onto another particle at a different location. It's more like the Star Trek.
Imbuing doesn't exist when the first one is being tweaked with. And it's instantaneous from one to the other. So, like, particle B over in Canary Island number one is what they're teleporting. That one winks out, and it appears in the second island or whatever the other lab is at the same time. So it might be completely different, that has all the exact same properties, but it's going from one to the other.
Well, you got to remember, too, that it disappears from one point because the act of measuring it and transmitting that information basically destroys it. And then imbuing that information on the other end. It's like the Star Trek teleportation, where it essentially destroys the original and creates a duplicate at the destination. That's one thing that a lot of people don't really pick up on with the teleportation. It's not moving something, it's just creating and destroying.
Which means your favorite Star Trek characters died every episode.
Exactly.
I like that.
All right, let's move on to this.
My brain hurts.
I've got a really short digital bell. Hadouken! It on a show called Pure Decking, where we use a Hadouken sound effect, you're calling somebody nerd? Really?
I didn't say nerd. And by the way, that's our word. See?
Yeah.
It's our word. You can't use that.
Well, I'm white. I can say honky all I want, right? Wait, that was a different argument.
This is an IHN. Digital Dojo, motherfucker, now.
FluxLabs.com. This guy who uses the handle Gynax details his process for making 3D printed keys that actually work in his locks. And he has a download of the SCAD files at the bottom of his post. And what he did was he took a pair of calibers and was able to create a blank copy of the house key with a 3D printer, just printed it out. Pretty much working from photos and measurements of the physical object. And after he got the blank, he figured out how to measure his keys and wrote a SCAD script and was able to print a key that would actually open the lock just by basically using a picture of the original.
That's wow. Cool. That is really cool.
Now, he did point out that the 3D printed keys are pretty brittle. So really, you'd put them in the lock and then use like a lockpick wrench to actually turn it so it doesn't break. But it does work. Now, this got my attention, mainly because when I was at DerbyCon a couple years ago, they were using an oversized 3D printed lock and key set to show people the basics of lock picking, because the lock was blown up to like 3 times the size of a regular lock, so you could really easily do it.
I've heard of anyone doing that.
Oh, yeah. And it took them forever to get the thing tuned, too. They kept pulling apart. But so, you know, this kind of – the blog post itself is actually a bit light on his details. He's just got several pictures of all the different kinds of keys he's printed, and it shows him, you know, putting one of these plastic keys in a lock and getting it to turn. But this kind of thing is interesting to me, because objects that rely on their physical uniqueness for security are now officially obsolete. Because if you've got a couple of good photos and measurements of the object, you've got a 3D printer, you just print one out and you can duplicate it. So if it's like a key, where it's the physical uniqueness of the object that makes it, you know, makes it useful, you can now essentially Xerox it. So it's, you know, that's not really secure anymore unless you, I don't know, have little sheets for your keys so nobody can take a picture of the stupid things unless, you know, you're using it.
Right.
So. Oh,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty short, but it's interesting to look at and kind of fun to point out that, yeah, thanks to these things. Now, granted, 3D printers aren't exactly, you know, everywhere yet, as I like to point out every time we talk about them. But you can get them, and I think it's pretty interesting that somebody's figured out how to duplicate keys. Which
is that more efficient than just using the bump key method to get through a lock?
No, it is not. It apparently took him several tries to get it right. But I'd imagine once you kind of got the method down, you could probably make this standard lock. I think there's like 8,000 unique keys. So yeah, a bump key would probably be a lot more efficient. But
I'm just envisioning bump keys are pretty loud though too. I mean, if you want to, I think bump keys are pretty loud though too. Or if you're talking about the, you know, the pick that you have to, you know, you squeeze a handle and it clacks and it bumps all the pins up and stuff.
It's
you know, this is like an actual key where.
Yeah, you make a copy.
Stealth is key, and you know, it leaves no marks, no sign of entry.
I like that, stealth is key. I see what you did there.
it's just another tool in the kit of penetration testing on site. You know.
Yeah, but this is also going to bring. We're going to see 3D printers more and more in the news because of stuff like this that keeps coming out. It's the whole, you know, oh, can you print a gun with it type thing, and now maybe this will take off. It'd be interesting to see how the mass media portrays them, and, you know, if you have a 3D printer, you're an evil person because you can make all of this illegal stuff. Oh, no.
I can see it now. Cyber criminals coming out of the basement to rob your house with keys they've copied without leaving their house. Fear!
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyways, so it's interesting. If nothing else, go look at the pictures, and you know, you can kind of get an idea of what he did. So, but that's he just used an off-the-shelf MakerBot printer. He didn't use. It's not like the 3D printed gun where they had this high-end industrial 3D printer, and nobody else has really been able to duplicate it. Didn't somebody try it, and the thing blew up, when they test fired it?
Lots of people trying to go back and replicate it, and apparently they made some semi-decent ones.
I wouldn't recommend it.
No, I wouldn't either.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with my store-bought guns.
What'd you say, are you?
I think less speak. If you don't talk about printing digital guns or whatever, fucking with those printers, man, the less spoken about it, the better. That way people aren't talking about it, and it's not at the forefront of people's minds when hey, I bought a digital printer. Shit, he's going to shoot up a school.
Exactly. You know, that's what I'm saying, man.
I want to be able to buy a digital printer, man, without the stigma of, oh, look at that. Creepy dude's going to print himself a gun.
I don't think you're going to be able to. I think you're going to have that stigma of, oh, you know, you bought a 3D printer. What illegal are you going to do with it, you know? And I think that's coming.
Like, you bought an Oculus Rift? Oh, you're really into 3D porn then. Because they don't see any other fucking thing for it. You know?
Exactly.
Oh, you're just in your high-end porn.
Let's be honest. That is going to account for like 90% of the Oculus Rift users.
And Second Life users would be the other 10%. But that's not the point.
Yeah,
I don't think
this
guy's
going to
get the scare factor that the gun got, though. The printing, the keys?
That's probably true. But I mean,
for it to
be
useful, they're going to need to know the address of the person who key they've taken a picture of, and then have an idea of the dimensions of the key from a photo.
That's true.
So, it's impractical as a I'm breaking into a building viewpoint. I think there are already better, well-established ways of doing it.
Yeah, a lockpit set.
But it is a cool toy.
And it just gives me more options.
I like talking about cool toys.
People.
All right, that's it. Listen to the stream. We're constantly updating it. We're always looking for new music, although the music is pretty good at this point. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Actually, if you've got podcasts that you want to hear on the station, let me know. I'm going to work with Sard a little bit, probably some this weekend, because I'm going to go out a wild limb and assume he's got Monday off as well. And yep. We're going to see if we can implement some shit. So,
by the way, you didn't know, Sard, but now you're busy.
That's okay.
Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays. I Have Nothing on Saturdays. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback form, the subreddit, the IRC chat, the... I don't know... Send something in an envelope to RU. That'll be interesting. I mean, you know, however you want to get... Yeah, I'm sure there's a way to get a hold of us, you know, in one of those ways. You know, if that's not good enough, then use the feedback form and tell us what we should be on so you can get a hold of us. That's fine. That's really pretty much all I've got, unless anybody's got something they're burning to add before I hit play on this music here.
Nope.
What? I said, I'll have you shot.
Have you lost your mind?
Sitting and waiting for death. Freezing away with the cold accent. Not a yet fading. Forced to accept, to accept it.
Thank you.